Welcome to Changemakers from Within, Carrie. We're so excited to have you here. And this is Carrie McHugh, who's the Senior Director of Customer and Community Relations and the Executive Director of the Joy and Childhood Foundation at Dunkin' Brands. This is going to be such a fun conversation. I'm so, so excited to have you here.
Rachel, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to chat.
Cool. So let's get into it. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
So I somehow ended up in a career of strategic philanthropy. Like, I started my career at Cone Communications, and it was right when corporate strategic philanthropy was starting. So, you know, cause marketing had kind of been around for a little while, but companies really digging deep and thinking about who they wanted their, what they wanted their brand to stand for was very new, which gives an indication of my age. So I started working at Cone and created some really fantastic programs with those guys. One that still existed up until about a year ago, which was ConAgra's Feeding Children Better program, which was looking at systemic change within childhood hunger, which is such an appropriate fit for a food company. From there, this is definitely going to happen.
wait, while we're on the subject, can you tell us about who the dog is?
So there's two of them, but one of them is relevant. One of them is Cooper Duncan, and he's actually the spokes dog for the Dogs for Joy program, which last year gave $2 million to hospitals to bring dogs to live in pediatric hospitals. So they're not visiting. This is not your therapy dog. This is not, oh, my dog is so great, I'm going to, you know, bring them in to visit twice a week. These are dogs that are bred to do this work, and they go to the hospital, and they live there. I mean, they go home at night with a doctor or a nurse or a child life specialist, their parent. They usually have a secondary parent in the hospital as well. And they spend the day there. They work, they do clinical work with patients. And long story short, the loud barking dog is Cooper Duncan, and he is the spokes dog for that program, but also comes with us to hospitals and hospitals who are considering getting dogs. We bring him in so they can understand the experience.
I am so excited that we had such a celebrity just join us for this podcast episode.
I wish I could promise it was the last time it was going to happen.
Cooper, we love to hear from you.
So I went from Cone to Home Depot, and at Home Depot, I did community relations work, internal and external communications for New England and New York, which was a really incredible organization. They give so much money, and their ties to the community are really great. So that was an incredible learning experience, going from being a consultant to being a practitioner, and how quickly I became aware of how little I actually knew. I remember dawning on me a couple months into the job, like, wow, if I knew as a consultant what I know now, I would have created programs differently. And God, now even looking back now, you know, it is interesting how a consultant sees the world very differently than a practitioner. And in some ways that's good, because the consultant still does kind of wear rosy glasses as to how things can work. So anyways, I went from Cone to Home Depot, and then I was pregnant. I had decided not to move to Atlanta with Home Depot, as they changed their office location for New England. And so I found myself pregnant, unemployed, and didn't want to be in community relations anymore, because it was so many nights and weekends and events. And so I decided to take a job. I wanted a job that I could, you know, be very 9 to 5, more time to focus on, you know, mommy time, and started to look for something. I became very pregnant. That's what happens over time. And I was about 7 months pregnant when I saw a job at Dunkin'. And the Dunkin' offices are very close to my house. And I was a huge fan of, you know, being a New Englander, a huge fan of Dunkin'. Dunkin' coffee, like, in particular, like iced coffee, like, that's what Dunkin' was to me. And I got an interview, and I decided to go, because I thought, well, at least I'll meet everybody. I didn't actually anticipate that I could get hired again. This was 16 years ago. It was a little different then. And they called me for an interview, and I said, yes, but can we do it quickly, because I'm pregnant? And the woman said, oh, no, you don't need to tell us that. And I said, well, I'm 220 pounds, and I'm 5'4". You're definitely going to know. But I need to have them fast because I'm going to have this baby. And they actually ended up hiring me before I had the baby, and I started work very, very pregnant. I worked for 3 weeks and then I went on maternity leave and came back.
Wow. Kudos to them. It's so, and you for going out and looking for a job in that stage of life. It's funny. I actually also, a few years ago when I was pregnant with my daughter, I also was looking for a job when I was like 6-7 months pregnant. And I was like, what am I doing? And I was like, do I tell them before I go in? How do I broach the subject? And it's, I mean, from my experiences, I just have to say kudos to Duncan for giving you that opportunity. Because even, you know, this was only a few years ago and it was really hard for companies to wrap their head around what that would look like. Understandably, I think there's like a kind of this weird, like you start and then you stop and then you start again. So that's incredible. It speaks highly of the brand. I think that's awesome.
It's the kind of thing they're really great at. And I'm so lucky that I went in for the interview because working at Duncan has really been exceptional. I did end up working. I was not in community relations. I worked at Duncan for a long time, 13 years probably, before I went back into philanthropy. So I was a few years ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I took over the call centers, this is what we call the support center, which is the phones, emails, social media from guests and solving guest issues. And then a couple years ago, the woman who ran the foundation was leaving and I kind of raised my hand and said, oh, you know, this is something I used to do for a living and I would really like to do it. And, you know, pitched why I'd be better at it than someone else and added it onto my job. So they were two entirely separate director positions, but we merged them into one, which I think is a good learning for me that you don't always have to choose. And there is a real value to working on just not one side of the business. One of my jobs is very operationally focused, so I know what's happening in the restaurants. And that informs a lot of for the foundation. Understanding our consumers and knowing how the store functions makes it a lot easier if you want to, let's say, raise money in the store. That was a very long-winded answer to a pretty short question.
No, that was a great answer. Can you tell us more about how the Joy and Childhood Foundation started and then from there how it evolved?
Yeah, I feel like I don't have any short answers.
No, that's fine. I like long answers because then I can just listen to you speak.
So for those who don't know, Dunkin' Brands owns multiple brands. We own Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins. We used to also own a company called Togo's, which was, you know, fantastic sandwiches and soups. And when we decided to start the foundation, we actually owned all three brands. And all three brands are now entirely franchised. Then I think I would have had to say predominantly franchised, which means each Dunkin' Donuts is owned by its own franchisee and they are independent business owners. So through the years, from the beginning of Dunkin' and Baskin Robbins, they have given tremendous amounts to the community, whether through volunteering or through money or through in-store programming. They have been doing great community charitable work. And so somewhere around 2006, we made the decision that we wanted to kind of bring all of this together and not only have franchisees doing work, but, you know, determine what the brand could stand for and kind of be more powerful together, which is an interesting process because franchisees are independent business owners. I think of our franchisees as both, you know, business owners, but also family. So, you know, imagine bringing together family who are also from very different backgrounds and places and financial circumstances to decide on one charity that you should give to as a brand.
That sounds like a challenge.
It really was one of the more interesting things I've done in my professional life because people are so passionate about what they give to and they're so passionate about the work they do, or, you know, a lot of it is typically based on an experience someone had, you know, a child who had been sick or a son who's a firefighter or a dad who was in the military, you know, really influenced by their personal experiences. And so you bring all these people together and to try to figure out how to get focused and give to individual, you know, one thing and have that money also be pooled into one place. And traumatic's not the right word, but it was complicated. And we went in wanting something very focused. And we ended up coming out with a foundation that was launched as a private charity in 2006 that was the Dunkin' Donuts Baskin Robbins Community Foundation. And to give an indication of the power of that name, I actually had to ask my team to go back and look at the articles of incorporation so someone could figure out what it was. It gave to three different areas. It gave to people who are sick, so kind of health, emergency workers, and feeding programs. It was, the overall theme was, you know, supporting people in times of crisis. And so that went on for a little while. In its first year, we're having trouble nailing it down, but it raised probably, you know, about $100,000.
And just to give folks context, you, even though you only kind of came on as executive director recently in recent years, you actually were involved in this process at the early stages.
Yeah, I should have said that. So because I did have this experience in corporate philanthropy, and at the time my job was internal franchisee and internal communications. I was a part of leading the trying to figure out what we should give to. I did a lot of work with franchisees, and I actually think I was even kind of part of the pushing for us doing this.
So even though you have had very varied roles throughout your experience, things were always kind of in whichever role somehow tied.
Oh, absolutely. And I think once you do corporate philanthropy, you're always, or philanthropy at all, you're always kind of thinking about how it would fit in and how to pull the pieces together. And so, yeah, no, I did get this great responsibility, which was to help kind of bring everybody together. And then I wrote the original articles of incorporation. And then someone took it on as their job, and I didn't actually work on it again for a long time. I mean, I was the peanut gallery, certainly, of like, well, how about we do this? Or what about that? And it kind of struggled along for there for a while. It was a long time before it, you know, raised its first $1 million. I think it was probably like, and I'm completely making this up, but like 6 or 7 years ago that it raised its first $1 million. And last year it raised 6. This year it would have raised a lot more than 6 if we hadn't been hit by COVID, because a lot of our fundraising is event-based. So yeah, I mean, it started and it went through some iterations, but I think it really became powerful and successful at the point that we narrowed it. And so, you know, Togo's came off because Togo's was sold, but then recently we decided to focus it just on the work of Duncan. So the more focused we got, the better the momentum was. I took on the foundation about 2 years ago, and in that time we have narrowed it quite a bit, and now actually we are the Duncan Joy and Childhood Foundation, and we are working with Baskin Robbins on kind of creating their own program. They just launched this terrific Little Heroes program, but the foundation overall is focused on Duncan and bringing joy to kids who are ill and feeding kids who don't have enough. And though those are two fairly different areas, they're both focused on kids and they're both very narrow within each of their sides. And we do really kind of think of them as two different sides of the foundation. And we exclusively stay within that. Now, COVID has changed that a little bit. We did some COVID specific funding, but even that was done within the kind of relationships that we already had in hospitals and with feeding programs.
Cool. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done around COVID and any new initiatives there?
Yeah. So when COVID first started, right after we started quarantine, maybe like the next day, even the week before quarantine started, we had started talking to our nonprofits because we had given them funding for this year. And we wanted to let them know that we would have flexibility with how they used their funding. So if you had an in-school backpack-based program, and now kids aren't in school, that we were really open to being flexible about the best way to use that money to help the kids now, or hospitals who were about to do 17 proms, just having those kind of really, really early on conversations to say, hey, no, this funding is there and can be flexible to do what it is that needs to be done now. You know, send us a quick email, or, you know, we can have a conversation about what it's going to go to, but, you know, don't worry about making it fit into what was originally agreed. And in doing that, we learned a tremendous amount about how very unique the situation was. You know, nobody was prepared for this kind of a pandemic, and a feeding program, which would have previously really relied on volunteers, which could no longer come in, and transportation, which was no longer moving, and salvage from restaurants or from grocery stores. Now, of course, restaurants are closed and grocery stores are inundated. So there is no longer the salvage. So they really, you know, some of them have lost all three of their pieces. They have to buy food, they have to pay for transportation, and they need to pay to, you know, sort the food or do whichever kind of feeding program it is. And in learning that, as soon as we went on quarantine, we stopped and said, okay, wait a second, we have to do more than just redirect our current funding. We needed to put out funding very specific to this issue. And so within days, we put out $1.25 million and opened it to all nonprofits and said, basically, you tell us how much you need and what you need. I think that the application had 5 or 6 questions. It was tiny. And we left it open only for a couple couple days because we really did get a ton of interest. I think in the end we left it open for a week, but we started reviewing them right away. Within 24 hours, we were actually FedExing checks to organizations to buy food. I mean, it was an incredibly harrowing time, but, and you know, I think this speaks to the how the foundation runs, being able to stop and listen. And then, you know, I feel like it's the word of COVID, pivot to what's needed is, well, it's kind of awesome. And it's one of those awesome things that corporate foundations, I think, can do more easily. You know, our board, I think I had all of the board votes in like 90 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great. And I think that the funding made a huge difference because people weren't scrambling to run around and ask for money. They were like, okay, now I have money I can do something with. And then we created another program that I just love during COVID, which is Hero Recharge, an organization called First Descent, who typically does adventure-based programming for young adults, older teens and young adults adventure programming, sent an email and said, hey, we are thinking about trying to support emergency workers in PTSD and trauma. And at the same time, we had just started looking at what we could do for, you know, in the same vein and, you know, got on the phone with them and, you know, within days created this program called Heroes Recharge, which we funded and we'll bring nurses and emergency workers together to share experiences around kind of outdoor adventure. You can't actually go on that website and look at those photos and not feel more enclosed by your house. But that program's really, it's powerful. And, you know, they received 8,000 applicants in like 2 weeks, which was double what they received all of last year. You know, creating programs that are really based on a community need is, it's fun. It's much more interesting to be creating programs based on where and there's a real need and you can make a real impact. And COVID, we've had some opportunity to do that.
It's awesome. That's really incredible. I love how you guys pivoted so quickly and got those checks out so fast and created new programs. I mean, it's like crazy how much was done in such a short period of time. That was so ambiguous to start.
And, you know, I think if as people are listening and are in the positions that they're starting foundations or they're looking at their programming, there's a real value if you can create something where you can be more nimble. You know, as typically corporate foundations are smaller. So even $6 million is small. I mean, it's not Robert Wood Johnson. And trying to keep things nimble because you can, you know, it's a nice way to be able to give money because you can give to things that to people who really need it and to programs that you can really see the impact as opposed to sitting in an office in a conference room and imagining what impact would look like. I imagine if I lived in, you know, had a kid in the hospital, I'd want this. Is very different than talking to kids in hospital and having them say, this is what we really want. And if you want to know what do those kids say, they say things like, please don't bring me any more teddy bears.
Yeah, wait, can you tell us some of the programming that you guys have done around specifically, I think, the teen prom, and you mentioned the Dogs for Joy, and I want to hear about them.
So the hospital program we had been doing was, we were working with a major nonprofit. We were giving them a large donation, and then they were working with hospitals. Our foundation got bigger and bigger. I think we felt a responsibility to be making more direct impact. And so we went out and talked to all the most important people in the hospital, from patients to parents to nurses, palliative care teams, doctors, you know, all the people who are interacting with these kids from hospitals really across the country, and asked them, what do you think truly makes impact? What do you think we should give to? What have you seen happen that you thought, God, I wish more kids could have this experience? A huge number of things came out of that, but two of the areas that bubbled up that we really felt like we could own and make bigger, one was teens, supporting teens who are in hospitals, because they are often forgotten. It's not that people don't want to do something. It's that, for one thing, it's really hard to, you know, you ask a teen what they want and they say, I don't know. And people tend to donate little kid stuff because that's their image of a sick kid. It's not a gnarly teenager. And, you know, gnarly teenagers just aren't, they don't have kind of that cuteness. So trying to pick those areas that, you know, were just a little bit different. And so we started to focus on teens. And then the other thing that came up that was, it's kind of wild, but it kept coming up, was pet therapy and dogs. And so I almost think it came up in every interview as like, you know, these are the big major things that are really hurting these families, but, you know, would really help these families. And oh yeah, and dogs are really great. And I think when you listen to that, you're like, well, I probably can't can't solve the finances for a family, but dogs. And so we looked across the dog, what was happening in the dog space in hospitals, and did come upon this, you know, fairly new kind of programming, which is, they call them in-residence dogs. And then we traveled around and we met people who had them in the hospital and talked to the organizations who were kind of raising these dogs, because they are service dogs, and thought, yeah, we can do this. Like, this is major impact on kids. They're part of their clinical treatment, and thought that could make a real difference. And so we created a program to do that, and that's Dogs for Joy. And then with teens, we do it. It's a variety of things, but one of them was, last year we decided to pilot a prom, and piloted a prom with Boston Children's Hospital, which I guess is another, I think, good learning on creating philanthropic programs is, you know, I always use the same example. You can sit in a conference room and think, I'm a teenager, I love a prom, this is how it should look, and this is what it should be. But that's really different from what happens in the execution. And we learned a ton from our pilot. It was a great prom. It really was so moving and beautiful. And
where was it?
It was at Fenway Park.
Well, that is the best possible prom you could ever have.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Decked out. And, you know, no parents were allowed in the area. And big DJ from Boston was the DJ. There were great games. And, you know, the kids really did let loose. And so after doing that, we took our learnings and then we opened up funding to other hospitals for proms. And if we hadn't have had COVID, we would have had 17 proms this year. So next year we'll relaunch our prom program. And that is specific for prom age kids. So, I mean, each hospital. So again, that was like very open-ended funding. Like, tell us what you would need to do a prom. And as well as the dog funding. The dog is like, it's not like you make a request and we give you a cookie cutter grant. The question is, you know, what would it take for you to be able to bring in an in-residence dog? What do you need to make that happen? Because it is very different at different hospitals. So those are two of our signature programs.
They sound amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about how you connect the dots between the foundation and Dunkin' Brands?
So when we're working optimally, they are integrated. So whether it's the marketing department or the culinary team or operations, they're thinking about ways that the foundation fits in to the things that they're doing. So whether it is, you know, a new franchisee opening a store and doing a grand opening donation. So we match any grand opening donation as long as it's within our giving area. And so that's, you know, it's part of the business plan of the store opening. We kind of integrate within that. Or marketing programs, you know, are there ways for us to integrate in? And then, you know, obviously we, not obviously, but we are a private charity. So we are a completely independent organization and we raise all of the money that we give. So, you know, you have programs in store that are entirely focused on the foundation and raising money, but you also have a lot of programs that, you know, we fit into. So right now there's a gift cards. When you make a purchase of a gift card online, that the gift card goes to a hero, like a nurse or a doctor or your UPS man. Dunkin' matches that, but consumers can also make a donation. And so I think it's about integrating it. It's about showing up, talking to people, figuring out what they're doing, having them really understand what you do and the impact, and telling them stories and getting them excited. And I mean, and Cooper Dunkin' actually really helps. So Cooper lives in the office a lot of the time. No, I say it as a joke, but not really. Like, I think Cooper Dunkin' has taught more franchisees and employees about the foundation and what they do than anything else. Cause you know, there's a dog walking around and people are like, what's up with that?
How are the franchisees involved in the foundation's work?
That's a great question. The franchisees are the heart and soul of the foundation. I keep talking about it as kind of us and the brand, but the reality is that the foundation is, it's about the franchisees. So franchisees, as independent business owners, are a part of the community. They're the neighbor. And they're the ones who are not only giving, but they're the ones who are seeing the impact of the work and kind of helping us, you know, every day do it better. Franchisees are, I mean, they're why it started, because they are so generous. They're also the ones who continue to push us to do better and have more local impact. I think of the foundation as being a way to support local impact.
Can you tell us more about Week of Joy?
Yeah. The Week of Joy is a volunteer week where across the country are the Dunkin' Brands operations team, franchisees, and their crew members go volunteer, usually in food banks or in feeding programs. And throughout kind of those 5 days, we have a huge number of food banks that get, you know, on the ground support and in a lot of cases donations, but also franchisees, crew, and ops team members who get to see the inner workings of foundations and feeding programs, which is very eye-opening. It's very eye-opening to get in your car and drive 5 minutes away, 10 minutes away, 25 minutes away, and see the incredible need. And that happens once a year. Unfortunately, this year it happened the week before quarantine, and so they were predominantly canceled. But we will do it again next year, I'm sure.
And what, can you tell us more about some of the food-specific programs that, I know we spoke a lot about the patient side and yeah, using their thing, but the other, kind of the other side of the foundation, what are some of the programs that you guys run there?
So a lot of that, those donations go to Feeding America, food banks, and then kind of local feeding programs, things like backpack programs where schools or community-based organizations put together backpacks for kids to take home for food for the weekend or for the week, summer programs that kids can come in and get a meal or a kids cafe. We have fit most of our childhood feeding programs around the standard mechanisms within the United States at the moment for feeding. We also have dabbled a little bit in some more research-based programs recently, and I think we'll be doing more of that. One of them at Dana-Farber that looks at the importance of food, heat, and air conditioning, as well as transportation on relapse rates for kids who have cancer. And so the research program is around ensuring that these kids have all these three items as they go through treatment. And so we have partnered to fund some of the research, but really the food program, and to try to kind of see how that goes and see how hospital-based feeding programs work. We certainly do have started funding more food pantries within hospitals. And at the moment, I think we're trying to figure out where can we make the biggest difference. We are going to bring a group of experts together with Feeding America to look at what some of the innovative programming is in the feeding space. And then we'll actually do some rapid funding coming right out of that so that those programs can get tested.
Cool. That's awesome. I love that you guys are thinking through not just talking about the innovation, but then the execution right after it. It's not usual. I think that's really special that you tie the two together so closely.
Well, and then hopefully that's where it happens to our funding moving forward. I think we're very happy with what we're doing in the health space. And I think we're happy with what we're doing in the feeding space. But I think we're in a place that says, you know, we do at least want to be pressure testing and seeing if we can do more, or because we can give unique funding, if there are things that we should be helping move forward. We haven't cracked we being the United States, have not cracked the code on the best way to get food to kids. And I think we want to as a society. I don't think we know how necessarily. No. And again, I don't mean to be speaking as an expert in this area. I am merely parroting the information that I've been given, but I think we want to help fund figuring it out.
That's awesome. Lastly, have you seen any kind of specific examples of how the programming you guys do translates to employees or franchisees outside of work or in their own giving, volunteering, or anything like that?
Yeah, and actually we try to make it so that franchisees and employees can really get involved in the work that we do. So I think as they kind of go see things and then get excited, we help them, you know, create things within their own area. Not necessarily unique programming, but help them participate in with the nonprofits that we're working with. Whenever you bring a group of people into a feeding program or a hospital or introduce them to people passionate about giving back, you see light bulbs. Even for the ones who know, and even, you know, for myself who sees lots of this, when you see the passion and you're talking about programs that are supporting kids and who are, you know, in the middle of a crisis, whether it's a food crisis or a health crisis, you want to get involved. It's hard not to. It's hard not to want to, you know, say, I'm going to fix it for this kid.
Awesome. Carrie, thank you so much for being here and being with us. Everything that you've done over the course of your career is truly incredible. And I love hearing about all the different programming and how you've kind of been involved the whole way through, whether it was your in your job description or not, speaks highly of both you and the company and how they kind of get their employees involved. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, I really appreciate being invited and love listening to the podcast. Thank you so much, Rachel, for all you've done.
Thanks, Gary.